Welcome to this interview, and I'm very happy today to be speaking to a fellow Mystery Writers of America New York chapter member. Her name is Pamela Ruth Meyer. She writes historical mysteries interwoven with love stories. As a high school forensic science teacher, she discovered inventive ways to solve crimes, which inspired her to write adventurous tales about crime-fighting duos like no other. Now, her debut manuscript, Death in Miniature, recently won the 2024 Daphne du Maurier Unpublished Romantic Suspense Award, and our organization's, our chapter's 2024 Leon Burstein Award for Aspiring Writers. Also the Rudy Award for Unpublished Romantic Suspense. It was a runner-up for the 2024 Unpublished Book Pipeline Award. There's so many things that you have either won or been a runner-up for with this book. Now, I know we're not going to delve into the book because, you know, it's hopefully everybody will be buying it soon on the bookshelves. But Pamela, how are you today?
Oh, Mark, thank you so much for inviting me today. This is very exciting for me. I am very well. I am unpublished, so all of these awards that you mentioned are for unpublished manuscripts. So we're looking for that book to be on the shelves, but it may be a little while because it's not gotten a deal yet. So that's part of the reason I was so excited to see that MWNA had, and a little nervous, sorry, MWA New York had this award, the Leon Burstein Award for Aspiring Writers, because as an unpublished writer, often I feel alone and out in the woods and nobody even knows I'm here. And, you know, then an award comes along and people that are professionals are going to read your work. And you can even sometimes win them. It just really is very exciting.
Well, you should get all the unpublished awards you can now because it's going to be published.
Oh, I hope so. I think you're right. My instincts tell me you're right. The first one that I won this year was the Daphne du Maurier, but it was in the unpublished division for romantic suspense. That was my first award, so excited. But my first one for mystery was this one. And I was just over the moon. Because as you had said in my bio, I do write historical mysteries with a lot of romance in them. And I've always thought that might be a problem. You know, a little too much two genres instead of one. And so to be able to win a mystery prize was just such a relief and a thrill for me.
And how long have you been part of MWA New York?
Oh, I think MWA was the first organization I joined. And I think probably 2020. Maybe 2019, but I think it was 2020. A little history on my writing experience. I started, as you said, I was a high school science teacher. And I also have a background as a career as a horse trainer. And so I had like, this is sort of my third career, I guess. And so while I was a science teacher for 20 years, I taught science. I saw a TV show I liked, and I didn't even know there was such a thing as fan fiction, but I discovered fan fiction, and I was annoyed at the way the TV show, you know, the plot that they made. I would have changed it. And so I started writing fan fiction, mostly just to show the writers, this is how you should have done it. I laugh. But at any rate, ended up really liking writing. It was such a surprise to me that I liked it. And for fan fiction, I wrote five or six novel length stories.
Wow.
And got a lot of feedback, you know, positive feedback, which was encouraging. And then I had an idea for a book of my own, and I did it. So I think I finished the first draft of my own manuscript probably in 2019. Hmm. And then, so I probably joined MWA, I don't know which year, 2019, 2020. Mm-hmm. As soon as I thought I would be a professional or an attempt at a professional writer, I joined MWA and probably MWA New York right after that, you know, once I was in MWA.
Well,
it was a tough time though, because of COVID, you know.
Oh, so. Yeah, sure. I know that things were on Zoom for a lot, for a long time. And I live in New Jersey. About I lived in the city for 25 years, New York. And then I moved out here full time because we used to come out on the weekends. We moved out here full time about 7 years ago. But it's not easy for me to get into the city. And I prefer not to if I don't have to. So it was nice to go to the holiday party. And I don't did what I think I met you.
Probably, you know, the thing that was a thrill about that, I'm almost, I don't know if disassociated is the right word, but I was so excited that I was like literally shaking. And so it's very good chance that I might have met you and my brain wasn't remembering names too good.
Well, I'm the same way. And I was just glad to finally meet people because this in 2024, I was asked to be on the board and I'm on the board for this year as well. But I don't get to interact physically with my peers very often in the chapter because a lot of what they do is in the city. And I'm, you know, it's difficult for me to do that. I'm going to try to get some things going on in New Jersey this year a little bit.
Oh, that's exciting. Cool. I know Nev Marsh, the president of, which I'm sure you know, but maybe our listeners don't. She had an event I went to in New Jersey. I wish I could remember what town, with a bunch of publishers. It was
Morristown or something like that.
Yeah, it was wonderful. MWA New York particularly, I mean, probably the other chapters, but I can say personally that a huge amount of opportunities are presented thanks to MWA New York.
Thank you.
Because so much. They do so much. It's wonderful.
I'm happy to hear you say that because we want to grow and we want to attract new members. And it's nice to hear that you feel that the chapter offers things. I am friends with Nev. She lives about 10, 15 minutes from
me. Yeah, I know she lives in New Jersey. Yeah.
So we've done a bunch of things together. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm curious, you were in the horse world for 20 years. I just want to just briefly ask you about that. Where is the horse world that you were in?
That's a great question, actually. I was a hunter jumper trainer. So not the horse racing, you know, it was jumping over obstacles, going to horse shows and competing. And I actually did that everywhere I lived. So kind of, you know, I was in the New York area. And then I lived in Seattle, Washington for a while. And then I came back to the New York area. Probably, you know, I had my own business and I also worked out of other people's stables. Most of it was in New York, Bedford, but also in Montvale, New Jersey, you know, hunter jumper stuff. I had been doing that since I was a child. I still remember my father, who I love deeply. When I got to be the age where I was going to go to college, and I was a very good student, so it might not have been unreasonable to think I was going to go to college, but I remember my father asking me, "So what are you planning on doing? You know, it's your senior year." And I said, well, Dad, I've already got a job lined up with a very famous man who's agreed to mentor me in the horse world. I'm not going to go to college. I'm going to go be a horse trainer. And he was disappointed and begged, basically. And I said, well, if you want me to go to college, you're going to have to pay for it and I can pick the college. So he paid for the first year of college and I went to a college that had equine studies. Down in Virginia. And then I ended up liking some of the courses. So I actually ended up staying in college, eventually got a master's degree, which was helpful when I wanted to become a teacher. The horse world is a part of my life in a way. You know, I have a certain body language with horses and dogs and animals that I think it almost makes my person. You know, I feel like that made me in many ways who I am, learning how to be confident and calm and trusting. It's the hardest part with the horses. And I write my characters. I always try to find an opportunity to put my characters with a horse so that I can sort of communicate that sort of deep body learning of how to be. It's interesting. It made me who I am in many ways.
Now, you write, at least with this historical mysteries interwoven with love stories. I had just a couple questions about that. One are there a lot of others who do that?
Oh, yeah, there are. So I of course, I had to look for comps when I was writing queries and things like that. And I had already found a few of them just because I was interested in the topic. So there are historical mysteries with a romance between the people who are investigating the mysteries. The one I probably would say is the most famous, I guess, is a woman named Deanna Rayborn. She has the Veronica Speedwell mysteries. And her two characters have a romance as they solve a different mystery in each book. But there's, I'll name just maybe two more for people who might want to look into it. Andrea Penrose does the Rexford, starts with a W, Rexford and Sloan mysteries. Again, the protagonists are a romantically involved couple. They eventually get married and stuff as the books progress. Sherry Thomas also has, Lady Sherlock. Where it's a similar idea. There are many.
My other question on that was, because I do know people who write historical fiction, Nev is one, and I have a good friend in Halifax who writes really...
I think Nev's had a romance, at least in her first one, Murder in Old Bombay.
Oh, yeah. But is there a period that you specifically want to write in?
Yes. Hopefully I'll write other stories too. But this story takes place in 1906, so very early 1900s, in Boston. And I did that with intention because there were some true facts that were very useful to build the story around. So those true facts involved Harvard, and Boston had the first medical examiner where they actually used like a pathologist and science instead of just lawyers and stuff to solve the crimes. That first medical examiner was in Boston. So I picked that history because my protagonist, I think I have described it maybe even on the website as Kate Belly. She's an individual who's written a historical romance, a historical mystery with romance. Kate Belly's Gilded Gotham Mysteries Meets Bones. So there is some, there's a pathologist in the story.
Well, also... I wanted to ask you about suggestions or advice or guidance that you would give to other. I don't like to refer to you as an aspiring writer because you're a writer to me.
You're wonderful. Thank you. I love feeling that as a truth. I do feel it. I do feel that I am a writer. But I will be honest with you, having I have accomplished a couple of things that a new writer starting out doesn't have. It took me a couple of years, but I did get an agent. It was a battle and a half. You know, that was not easy. And when I got an agent, her name is Terry Wolf of AKA Literary Management, I decided at that moment, oh, you really are a writer, and now you're going to be famous. You know, that was a couple years ago. So, you know, there's like each of these like mountains you climb, you're like, well, I'll be a writer then, you know, well, I'll be a writer then. And part of me is like, well, you're not really a writer till you have a published book. But I thank you for saying it, because it feels like I am to me, too. So towards those various like milestones, I guess, procuring representation of an agent, I found that you have to learn to take criticism. Mm-hmm. So the first year I entered many of these contests, I entered them because I wanted feedback. Or I still thought I would win and I didn't, but I would sign up. Like if they offered, you could pay a little extra money maybe, and they would have an editor look at your work and give you feedback. I always did that. And I learned huge amounts from that. All these, like, I guess I'll call them workshops. You might have a better official name for them, but MWA and MWA New York, they are always offering, you know, like there's a, an author who's talking about writing dialogue or all kinds of things. And I always did all those things. I paid money. I couldn't go to conferences because of COVID, but I went online to all the conferences. You know, like I spent a decent amount of money learning. Writer's Digest had, you know, some program where you paid an editor to read your, I don't know, I think she did the first 50,000 words or something. It was wonderful, wonderful. I learned so much. But every time I would get the feedback, I would have the hackles up, you know? I would read the first thing like, what do you mean? I say that on page two, you know? But eventually you figure out, well, if they didn't catch that on page two, you maybe didn't say it quite as firmly as you needed to on page two, you know, like you do learn to take that criticism and use it to improve. And nothing feels better than getting better.
And what is in store for you? I know that you're looking for a publisher for this book, but are you writing on another one? Are you working on another one?
Yes, I am. I foresee this Death in Miniature as a series. And I have written a first draft of a second, what I think would be the second book in the series. And I've even outlined, I am an outliner, I've outlined even a third book. But I have made a little document that is sort of story ideas, I think I call it. Because, you know, I realize that if this book or this series never really does take off like I hope it does, I want to have other ideas to work on. So, I haven't started any of them, but I've written down, well, that's not a bad idea. That could be like the little nugget that gives me a story. And I've written them down in this document. So at this point, what I have is the first book is the manuscript that, has won this award, and a first draft of the second book. Now, Mark, I have one question to ask you.
Yeah.
So the second book, that draft one that I wrote, that's too long. I tend to write long and have to cut a lot. Mm-hmm. As an experienced author, do you have any advice for me on that? Do you tend to do that? Do you write long?
I am the opposite. I think I believe that brevity and efficiency are key for me to writing. And my first mystery was too long. And I got some criticism for that. I was, you know, so I learned from it. I do I don't ever read reviews, but initially I've learned from things people criticized about books, as long as mm-hmm. they're not just trolls hating on me or hating on the book. But and one was that it was too long. It's like too wordy. So if for instance, somebody says, because I have a lot of author friends, I'll go, oh, I got I just finished 100,000 words. And I'm like, you need to cut 20 at least. It's just too long. But I tend to write short books deliberately mm-hmm. because part of it is my attention span. So I'm not the best person to ask. But I do think, even if I'm picking up a book in the bookstore, if it's, you know, I think 80,000 words is kind of the outside for me. And I'm not a word count person at all. I don't write to word count. I finish a scene, or I finish an emotion, or a beat, as I call them. But I think for me, I don't know what you're talking about in terms of length, but when it gets up above 80,000 words, there's a chance I'm going to lose interest in the last 40 pages. Uh-huh. Well, does that make any sense at all?
It makes a lot of sense. It's a little scary. My agent said that I need to get it down to 90.
Oh yeah. Okay. That's fine. I mean, whether it's fine, I shouldn't be saying that, but 90,000 isn't daunting. But when some author goes, I got 120,000 words, it's like, then you need to cut. It just means you need to cut. And Tennessee Williams was supposedly said, you know, to kill your darlings, which means when you've, especially if you tend to write long, I'm the opposite. Like I said, I have to go back sometimes and add, I've got to bulk it up a little bit because there's not enough there. But if it's long, go back and cut sentences that might be redundant, or cut sentences that you don't really need. Mm-hmm. You know, that's all part of the rewrites. But you can even take out. I take out whole paragraphs. I'm working right now. I'm ghostwriting a woman's book with her, as she's a client. And it's work for hire, but I really like her. She's got a really interesting story, and she's a wonderful person. But when I write these chapters, I definitely have been going back and going, like, I already said this. You know, I already said whatever it was I sang. And it pare it down, just pare it down. You learn to pare things down.
But you said you go back and do that. So, like, you might write, I don't know, maybe you do it scene by scene. I don't know. But like I cut about 7,000 words when I went back and went through it once before I called it done, you know, before I said draft one was done, doing kind of what you're saying.
Well, with her, what I mean is that because I want to give her, I don't want to give her a rough chapter. Like we're doing a chapter at a time. Uh-huh. And so I don't want to give her a rough copy. So I will go over it a couple times. And that's when I find things that I want to take out or flesh out or detail. And then the other thing, not to get off track, but one of the ways that I write is I'm constantly polishing because I do get stuck. It's called, you know, some people call it writer's block. I'm not a fan of that. Because I don't want to admit that I have it.
Yeah, but I like to avoid it like the plague. I don't even pretend the word doesn't exist. So I haven't had the problem. I don't want to have that problem.
No. But what I do is when I can't seem to find my way forward is I go back to the beginning and I basically polish it, the whole thing, and it gets my momentum going again. But that's another part of the process where I polish a lot, I cut a lot, I change words, and it's just a constantly, it takes me, somebody said, how long does it take you to write a book? And I said, a year. And I thought that was fast. I thought, I don't think that's fast at all.
Well, you're sitting down in the chair a lot in that year.
Pretty much every day. And one last thing I'm going to throw out here, because I mentioned I do workshops and journaling workshops, and so I'm always looking for prompts for the group, for the writers, so that they can write about these prompts. And Anne Lamott, just the other day, I read something from her, and she said, somebody asked her, how do you keep writing? And she said, stop not writing. And that has really stuck with me because I'm really bad about not writing. I will get up and sit at my desk at 4 o'clock in the morning, 4:30 in the morning. I'm going to work on my client's book. I'm going to work on my mystery. And the next thing you know, I'm looking at my email and I'm doing website work and I'm responding to this. I'm doing everything but writing. So I loved it that she made it very clear for me that what I'm doing is I'm not writing. That's what I need to stop doing.
She's the one who wrote Bird in Hand.
I just got that book. It just came from Amazon yesterday because somebody told me about it.
Yeah.
Bird by Bird.
Yeah. It's very interesting. I have a woman that I use as a developmental editor before I, you know, send work that I think my agent could even look at. She recommended the book. I think you'll like it. It's very interesting.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you got it right. Got it.
And thank you for talking to me. It's been really delightful. I mean, I could just talk to you for another hour, but I think that might take up a little too long for basically a podcast. I don't call it a podcast. They're just audio interviews,
but thank you. I've enjoyed it too.
Delighted to have you on. And I just wish you so much success because, you deserve it.
Thank you. This award and even this conversation with you will hopefully move me along towards that goal. Thank you.
And feel free to stay in touch. I'm easy to find.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.